Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Good Friday. It's April 10th, 31 degrees here in Old Town Park. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Park City Restaurant Association Executive Director Ginger Wick. Later on, Park City Council Member Tim Henney calling in with a recap from yesterday's meeting. And finally, Casa Domingo host Jorge Rodriguez is scheduled to talk about the COVID-19 coverage he's providing on Casa Domingo every Sunday night. Well, due to the ongoing challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Park City Area Restaurant Association has decided to cancel this year's annual Save of the Summit event that was scheduled for June 27th. Joining me now on the phone, I have the Executive Director of the Restaurant Association, Ginger Wick. Good morning, Ginger.
Good morning.
So I guess I had thought that the event was already canceled, that we made a decision last year to kind of take the year off to figure out how to reimagine Save of the Summit.
Yep, we had started that process and made that announcement back in the fall, and then the HPCA and other organizations asked us to rethink that, really did not want us to take a year off, so we came together with all those folks and some of the participating restaurants and crafted out a plan that would have allowed us to host it in 2020, but unfortunately, now we're not hosting it. So kind of all over the place. But we had come back to the table and had put it back on the calendar. But unfortunately, that is not going to happen now.
Okay. So what's the thinking about canceling now? I mean, is it just a thought that you wouldn't be able to pull it together last minute, not knowing whether or not we would be able to gather in tight places again?
You know, a lot of factors went into this decision. It is a very expensive event for restaurants to put on. So given that they are all taking a huge financial hit right now, adding that financial burden onto them was one of the reasons. Not knowing when we're going to be able to come out the other side of this, and if a large gathering of this size, because keep in mind, this event does bring in close to 3,000 diners. Having such a huge event so closely, assuming we are able to come out of this in June, was that the best decision for public safety? And would that fall into any guidelines that may be placed on us as we ease back into hopefully a normal life? Just all those unknowns. And then the restaurant's staffing, obviously they've all had to let go significant staff numbers. Would they have the staff to host it? Would people be able, everyone's been laid off, would people be able to afford it? Just so many unknowns. So we opted to cancel the event, and then the restaurants pay a participation fee to the Restaurant Association, and those fees go to help pay for police and marking and all of that. So we have refunded all of that, those funds back to the restaurants to try and help bridge the gap a little bit during this crazy time that we're all facing.
Sure. So the plan, though, is at this point to return in 2021?
That is the plan right now. The date in 2021 would be June 26th. And as we move towards the new normal, we can figure out what that looks like. There has been some creative thinking about, well, maybe we could possibly host a version out of it or something in the fall if dates were to open up on the community calendar. And as we move back into opening everyone's doors, we'll certainly look at creative ways to drive business into all the restaurants and support the community and get our vibrancy back. So all creative thoughts will be on the table as we start to move through the summer and into the fall and into the winter season.
Yeah. So any thoughts about how the event might change based on kind of the rethinking of the event? I mean, do you expect to see what we've seen all along or something differently in 2021?
Well, I think that's kind of hard to answer right now, just given the state that we're in. But I think the event was a good event and certainly very popular and vibrant for the community and a great way to kick off the summer season. And certainly would like to have it do that again next year. So I don't see any major changes to it in 2021 unless the community and our potentially the new culture that we'll be living in would you know, need us to do that. So I don't, at this point, I would say it would look exactly like it has in the past.
Okay. Can we talk just a little bit about how the member restaurants are doing? I think you represent about 70 restaurants, members of the association. Any idea how many of them decided to stay open during all that's going on this spring?
Yeah, I mean, we have an ongoing list on our website of all restaurants across the board, whether they are a member of our association or not. We have opted to help promote everybody during this crazy time. And some restaurants did start out wanting to try and do curbside service, and some of them realized that there just wasn't enough demand to offer that type of service, and so then have subsequently decided to stop offering that. So there's currently, throughout all of Summit County, and again, whether they're members or not, we've got them listed, but there's currently close to about 35 folks that are offering curbside and or delivery service. And some of them are doing really well. Some of them are even offering Easter packages, provisions. The top of Main Street is offering some Easter offerings, Hearth and Hill and Tupelo. And then also the State Road Tavern out at DeJoria Center is offering some stuff. Dense Your Taste Catering and Allure Catering are all offering Easter stuff. So they're trying to be creative as they can and still provide offerings to the community. But it is tough. It's very difficult on them for sure.
Yeah.
If you think about it, 35 restaurants out of collectively in our community, that's not a lot of people that are in business right now.
Yeah. Many of them, well, I shouldn't say many, but several of them would have closed really pretty much for the month of May. But just kind of a forced closure now where they actually still had an opportunity to bring some revenue in. I guess, what are you hearing from them? I mean, are they any word from when they could be reopened? I mean, meeting with the health director or anything with some kind of guess? And would they even bother to open, you know, if things opened up in May?
Yeah, of course, we're all waiting for the Summit County Health Department to let not only restaurants but all businesses know when they can start to open their doors and return to regular business. I have not heard any information on the projection of when that could possibly happen. In talking to all the various restaurants that participate in Savor the Summit, it's kind of, as we return back to normal, it's going to be a little bit all over the board. They're going to have to ease back into it. It's not going to be where, okay, you know, June 1st or whatever the date is, everybody's just going to be open 7 days a week. They're all going to have to rehire employees and ease back into it. So I think we'll see, you know, some of them doing maybe weekends only to start, some of them, you know, trying to maybe just offering lunch and dinner. I think it'll be a slow transition back into regular business is what I envision happening and kind of what I've heard from them. So hopefully we can turn the lights back on sooner than later.
Right. And any idea how gift certificate sales are going? I think there may be some people concerned that they buy a certificate and may not see the restaurant reopen.
You know, I haven't been given the data on how gift certificates are going. I'm sure that if for whatever, you know, if you bought a gift certificate to a specific restaurant and God forbid that restaurant doesn't reopen, I'm sure that folks can, you know, we can find a scenario to work through that. But I don't have the data on Park City Gifts that how that is going, because it's for all businesses, not just restaurants. So I'm not sure how that is, what the numbers are there.
Okay. Hey, anything else that you wanted to mention?
Well, I just, everyone stay safe. And, of course, if you can get out and support the restaurants that are offering curbside services, or any businesses for that matter, supporting the community now is more important than ever. And everyone stay safe, and we'll get through this. And hopefully in the very near future, we'll be all back out on the streets enjoying our great community.
Yeah. And the website then, people can check to find out who's open?
Yeah, the website is parkcityrestaurants.com, and there's a link right there on the homepage. And it does, like I mentioned before, it does change restaurants, alter hours or drop off. So be sure to check back, and we'll try and keep you as informed as we can.
Okay. Ginger Wicks is the executive director of the Park City Restaurant Association. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Take care.
Still to come, we'll be checking in with Jorge Rodriguez, but first, the Park City Council met for a special meeting via Zoom last night. City Council member Tim Henney joins us by phone with the recap. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, Leslie.
So the meeting was called last minute as some budget projections came in, all a result, of course, of the COVID-19 outbreak. Park City is planning for a $4 million deficit, mostly due to the loss of sales tax revenue. Can you talk a little bit about the position the city is in to address this?
Yeah. Well, the city's in really, in relative terms, excellent position to weather this storm. And we've got reserve balances. And actually, we've talked about this in the past every time we have budget discussions, and we talk about the lines crossing between our revenues and our expenditures, and we've got this projection that models out when that's going to happen, but we've never had to speak about it in terms or with the context of something that is like the situation that we're going through now, where our revenues have been immediately shut off, but we have built a system and prepared for not exactly this situation, but certainly something similar to this situation. So the fact of the matter is, not only in addition to the various reserve funds that we have, like the general fund, we're allowed to keep 25% of the fund in reserve. So we've got close to $9 million in the general fund in reserve. But we also have reserves in our capital improvement program, not only in the capital improvement program that's, the current year, which is about $3 million, but also in the five-year projection of capital projects, we've got another $5 million. So in addition to that, and this is the one that we always talk about, is our entire capital project fund or projection, the five-year model, is basically a form of a reserve fund. We can delay, we can cancel any of those projects. Well, when I say any, I'm making an absolute statement, which isn't accurate, but we've got a lot of flexibility in those funds to delay or cancel, which then frees up funds for operations and can continue to keep the city going. But having said all that, which puts us in a really great position from a relative standpoint to other communities, that when they have their revenue streams shut off the way that our sales tax revenue stream has been shut off, would not have the ability to weather the storm. We're in really good relative position.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the capital projects that might be deferred to make up the loss this fiscal year. I think you're shooting for about a $2 million deference.
Yeah, and that's just this year. And that really is just a matter of timing, and that's not going to have a huge impact. The one that's going to have a huge impact is looking at our capital projects in fiscal year 2020, one as opposed to this year. This year, we're just closing a gap for the next few months until July 1st. July 1st is really the budget that is going to start to see impact to projects.
Okay, so when we look at the 2021 fiscal year budget, what projects would be delayed then or canceled, you know, to kind of make up that $2 million target that you're shooting for?
Well, everything's on the table except things that are deemed essential, like the Three Kings Water Project is not going to be canceled. That's underway. That entire old Spiro water treatment plant or Three Kings plant has been deconstructed, and that will continue to move on as quickly as possible to mitigate the impact to the neighbors. You know, it's a very it has phases that are incredibly intensive in activity and noisy and disruptive, and that's one of them that we're in right now, the deconstruction. A lot of trucks up and down Three Kings Drive, and we want to compact that into a shortest time frame as possible as opposed to having it go longer. So, you know, that's the approach there, working long hours, I think from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day and making a lot of progress. But something like, you know, the one that we've talked about, I guess most publicly, is the one that's tied most directly to hospitality and tourism, which is the Art and Culture District. The Art and Culture District is, you know, the purchase was initially funded by a room tax, and there is no room tax coming in right now. That is one of the revenue streams that's gone to zero. Now we're in a great position. Because of our reserves and because of the way we built the system to continue to pay the debt service on the bonds that we issued to buy the property. But it does represent an example of a project that's large, that will be very impactful and requires numerous partners. You know, we have Sundance, we have Kimball, and we have the city all working together on that project. And everybody has their own circumstance and situation that they have to work through, where this health disaster, natural disaster related to COVID-19, could have impact for any one of those or all of those partners. And I would say it's impacting all of those partners. So that's one that we have to look at and think about and kind of reassess.
Okay, because we had heard from newly hired Deputy City Manager David Everett yesterday that the Art and Culture District does seem to be moving along as planned. I mean, we've got one tenant leaving already, Maverick, and the rest of them are expected to be out by September 1st.
Yeah, we're sticking to the plan for the time being. As I said, you know, we've got a means of covering the shortfall for this fiscal year. And then, in June, when we finalize the 2021 fiscal budget, that's going to be where we really have to make some decisions, and we're going to know a lot more by June 1 and certainly by July 1 when we do have the final budget in place. But, you know, that's an ongoing assessment, and David's correct. You know, we have work that we can do now to get things shovel ready. You also heard that in comments from Steve Joyce, how important it is to have projects that are shovel ready. So that's going to weigh heavily in favor of certain projects and probably work against other projects. I think the Art and Culture District is one of those that would benefit from being shovel ready because there's a significant transportation component to it. And there's also a affordable housing component. And both of those are likely to see increased funding from the federal and state level as far as a recovery package. And we want to be in a position to benefit and capitalize on that. You know, we're going to be opportunistic with some of these.
Yeah. City Manager Matt Dias said that he's not sure how far the city will have to go to make up the shortfall and certainly didn't rule out the possibility of laying off staff, at least temporarily. So at what point will the city need to do that?
Well, again, that we're not going to do it this fiscal year. We're going to finish this out with the with covering that $4 million shortfall without any layoffs or furloughs, but you're absolutely right, and that's what Matt laid out. He can't make any promises or guarantees with what we know at this point. But as I have said and will repeatedly say, and you've heard from Rich Bullough at the health department as well, you know, every day and every week we learn a little more. Four weeks ago, The list was heavily weighted in favor of what we didn't know. In fact, we knew very little, if anything. And what we didn't know was significant and substantial. And every day and every week and every month, we start to tip that scale in favor of what we do know, and we're able to make more informed decisions, and that plays right into our budgeting process. I mean, it would be wonderful if we finalized the budget in June that was conservative and, represented some cutbacks in sales, well, significant reductions in sales tax and other taxes that are dependent upon hospitality and tourism, and then found that we continued to learn that we were able to open businesses and put people back to work ahead of schedule, ahead of the budgeted schedule. That would be the best case scenario. I don't think there's a high likelihood of that happening. I think this is going to be a little more prolonged. But, we will know more in June than we know today, and it'll be a significant shift to what we know, and we'll be making much more informed decisions then. And also that our citizens can weigh in and help us with those decisions. This is one of those times where normally the budgeting process doesn't get any participation or fanfare. This time, I think we may have some significant resident input, which would be great.
Yeah. And in addition to the $2 million reduction in the capital fund for next fiscal year, my understanding is you also hope to reduce the general fund by about $750,000. So a big...
Yes, Leslie, that's all this year. That's to finish us out.
That's just to finish this year. Okay. Well, yeah. Certainly a big savings would have been to delay hiring the two new full-time benefited positions, the two new deputy city managers. So why was the decision made to move forward with getting them on the payroll?
Well, they're critical players to the team. You know, you want to have the best construct of a system or a vehicle to weather the storm, and you want to have the right crew working that vehicle. You know, I used the analogy last night of sailing, and if you're out and if you're 200 miles offshore and it's blowing 60 knots, you don't want to find yourself going, I'm in the wrong boat and I'm with the wrong crew. You want to say, I'm in the right boat to weather this, and I feel comfortable and confident in the boat that I have, and I want to be comfortable and confident in the crew that I have. So, yeah, these are people who are essential to moving the mission forward and keeping us in a very good position, just as, our past staff has done that. Our past staff, Nate Rockwood, who's no longer on city staff and took a position down in the valley closer to home, which was great for him, has put us in a really good position after 10 years of working at the city. And I could say that across the board with numerous people. So we're filling critical roles. You know, one was the community development director and one was the assistant city manager. And we're calling both of these assistant city managers, but they have responsibility and purview for different aspects of the organization. And it's building the best team for any circumstance, and we don't want to be shorthanded.
Two public comments mentioned the situation of immigrants in the community who don't qualify for financial aid from the federal or state governments. A petition going around for landlords to postpone or lower rent for apartment complexes where they live. Is the city doing anything to support those who don't qualify for government support? Basically, our undocumented immigrants we're talking about.
Well, we're doing things on a number of fronts. The thing that we're doing that's most immediate that was announced last night is that on April 30th, we plan to approve a $150,000 package of grants to numerous organizations. I'll just go through them in order, but the Christian Center will be getting $60,000 for their basic assistance fund, and that's a fund that helps exactly those people that you just described. Among others, it's not just focused on those people, but that population is a part of the group that is being addressed by the Christian Center. And then the community, Park City Community Foundation, will be getting $50,000, and that $50,000 grant is being matched by the board of the community foundation, so it actually puts $100,000 to work in the community. Then People's Health will be getting $20,000, the Peace House will be getting $10,000, and the Jewish Family Services will be getting $10,000. Each one of those organizations are meeting the needs of the people that you described, as well as others within the community who are being impacted in severe ways by COVID-19 and the closure of businesses. Now, longer term, so the next phase, I guess, or the next tranche of what the city's doing is we are working with all of our lessees and forgiving rent for a month or two. So that's as lessor, as landlord to those nonprofits, that's a benefit to them, and that trickles down and helps everybody in the community in one way or another. And then long term, you know, Leslie, this isn't addressing, you know, the pressure upon landlords, but you have to look at who your landlords are. And if you have landlords that are investors and are playing by the free market and private sector rules, which are the rules that dominate investment, they are going to be looking for the greatest return on their investment they can possibly get, and they're going to be motivated by profit. And that's irrespective of who their tenants are. It's irrespective of what community you're in. These are the rules that are universal. So a investment landlord will not be someone who is likely to forgive rent for a variety of reasons, but primarily because they're driven by profit. Now, you can replace that landlord with the community. You can build community housing, and you can build it in for sale models or rental models. We haven't done rental models yet, but it's on the table, and it's something that we hope to begin achieving with the Art and Culture District. Then you've put the community in the position of being the landlord. You can deed restrict and limit the amount of rent, and you can address the needs of a different group of people in your community. And that's exactly what our housing program is trying to do. That's not going to help people this year, this month, May's rent, June's rent. But, you know, down the road, 10 years from now, we'll be looking back and saying, I'm glad we did this housing program. I'm glad we have more rental properties because, you know, you have to start somewhere and you have to put that in place if you're going to change the model from profit-driven to community benefit. So that's where part of that comes from, and that's how I would opt to continue to address this critical need in the community.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask you, San Francisco reversed its 13-year ban on plastic bags and now prohibiting the reusable bags that city leaders once championed because of the coronavirus. The city announced this switch this week as part of its plan to curb the spread of coronavirus. Should Park City follow suit here?
You know, what you just framed is being done as a temporary response to the spread of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. If, you know, what we've heard is the CDC and the health department do not want people's personal reusable bags entering the store. So that's been implemented and adopted by all of the grocery stores in our area. That are, you know, even ones like Whole Foods, which were never subject to the bag ban. They've never had plastic bags as an option, but you have to either use cardboard or paper bags or keep your groceries in the cart, take them out to the car and put them in your reusable bags, which is what I did yesterday. So there are options without, you know, falling back on plastic bags. If it were something that were deemed necessary to accomplish the goals of containing the spread of coronavirus, then, you know, I think we would certainly consider it. We haven't heard from our local retailers on this front. We have heard from the plastic bag ban manufacturers lobby. And, you know, that's one data point. It's one that we don't tend to weight all that heavily because it's not local. It's, you know, national, and they have a certain agenda and interest. You know, it's a special interest group with their interests at heart, not the communities. Our community does not want to use plastic bags. And, mm-hmm. but if we had to relax that for a temporary amount of time, I know we would give it the adequate consideration and vetting. So that's, you know, hopefully we won't go there, but it certainly is something we would consider.
Okay. Tim, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, you know, as everybody's out walking around, I just want to say it's a great opportunity to carry a bag with you, maybe one of those old plastic bags that you have left over from the days of plastic bags, or find one along the trail or the road or the side of the road, because there's a few laying around, and pick up some garbage while you're out there. And I have to tell you, I've seen so many people doing that, and is just fabulous. I tend to do that when I'm out, and people thank me for doing it. Yesterday, I had just thrown my bag of garbage away and was cutting through the Prospector internal trail, and there was a gentleman walking along picking up garbage in a plastic bag, and it was almost full, and we thanked him for what he was doing, and he enjoyed being thanked and shown that appreciation. It's a great way to connect with your community. It's a great way to pitch in and do something. We all want to be helpful. We all want to be contributing. So physical distancing and picking up garbage while the weather is great and the snow's melting is an excellent way to do that. And I invite everybody to think about doing it.
Okay. Tim, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Park City Council member Tim Henney, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as you've been listening to all the news and information on the Local News Hour about how Summit and Wasatch counties and their community partners are dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, KPCW has been offering similar news on our Spanish-speaking program, Cada Domingo. You can hear that here, of course, on KPCW every Sunday night from 7 to 10 p.m. It's hosted by Jorge Rodriguez. Jorge joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Lizzie. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So you've been hosting Cada Domingo for how long now?
Oh, man, I lost track. It's probably been, I'm going to say 10 years, but I think it's been longer than that.
Yeah, maybe, because I know the show started probably 5 or 6 years before you came on board. It was started by Sylvia Levitt. She was a community activist. And then for a few years, we had kind of a band of rotating Cada Domingo hosts. And then at what point then did you start doing it just kind of like all by yourself in the last, what, five, six years?
At least for the last 6 years, I've been doing it on my own.
Okay. So, I mean, the show, I mean, is it mostly music or conversation?
Well, so it really depends. I started out playing a lot of music, but since then I realized that I had a perfect opportunity to bring a lot of interesting and culturally and socially relevant guests on the show, considering how active our community members are and really the state, especially with interest regarding the Latino population.
Yeah.
And so I do a lot of interviews now. There is some music, there's definitely some cultural stuff, but I try to bring in guests that are going to talk about issues that matter to the community.
Sure. And since the pandemic, of course, coming to Park City, Summit, Wasatch County, how has the focus of the show changed?
Well, it's completely changed. I mean, the show is 3 hours, and I would say 2.5 out of those 3 hours tend to be guests talking and updating about the coronavirus, about, you know, both in Wasatch and Summit County, but also statewide overall. And so I've had several guests on the show that talk about that those days and those things. And since, you know, the situation with this crisis changes every day, it's something where even if I have the same three guests every week, there's something new to talk about.
Yeah. So who are some of those regulars and that you've been bringing on?
I've had members of the Wasatch Latino Coalition, Trudy Brereton. She is a health educator with the Wasatch County Department. And then I have a couple of members of the Wasatch Latino Coalition, Yuri Jensen and Adriana Lalinde Andrews. And they come in and they talk about the situation in Wasatch, what the recommendations are going on within their county, and really kind of try to inform their community and that county on what the steps are. I also have Rochelle Flynn from the People's Health Clinic, and she's a physician's assistant. And she also talks to us about it, and then we can talk a little bit more on the science side of things. I also invite Edwin Espinel. He's a systems specialist with the Utah Department of Health, and he talks more on a much broader and more in-depth view about the health statewide.
Okay. And I think you're also bringing in representatives from the Christian Center and the Peace House as well?
Yes, and I've brought in guests from all of the community members, that or rather all the nonprofits within the community. One of the big emphases that I have is to make sure that the show is a place where people can come and get as much information as possible about what is going on in the community, but also really kind of try to bring a voice to the community.
Yeah. And then all of these agencies do have Spanish-speaking staff, so that, I mean, you're continuing the conversation in Spanish?
Yes. The show is in Spanish. All of these organizations can't have somebody who speaks Spanish within them. And if they don't, then I'm always able to provide an interpreter. So even if you speak English, you might even be able to hear the show and get something out of it.
Okay. And have you had any response, I mean, from listeners? I mean, from the Latino community? Are they
Yes.
Letting you know they're listening?
There is a really strong following for the show. In fact, many, many questions before the coronavirus tended to revolve around the issue of housing. There's a large concern by a lot of the community members of price increases, even before the crisis hit. And so, yeah, there's definitely a following. And, you know, of course, we could always use more listeners, especially considering all of the amount of information that is constantly coming out. I feel like having a place to get that information would be helpful.
Yeah. And do you allow listeners to call in with questions, or is it just something you're trying to do on the Facebook page? Or
I do both, actually. Mm-hmm. So through the Facebook page, people are able to leave messages that they have. And usually I address their questions or even ask the questions to the panelists directly. But they're also able to call in live. I feel like for the type of show, live callers tend to be a little bit more shy, but they are always welcome to call in.
Okay. All right. And then how are we getting the word out about what's available out there?
Well, there's a lot of events that are going on. In fact, there's going to be an event that that the community is organizing, all of the nonprofits. We're talking about a conversation in Spanish that's going to be taking place Wednesday, April 15th, between 3 and 4 p.m., and then from then on, every Wednesday, and it's going to be a live a conversation that people could take advantage of or see through the Facebook Live of the Park City Municipal website. And so the idea is to have all of the nonprofits chat and for people to get to know what all of the services are, you know, regarding food, health, financial help, internet access, et cetera, but also, you know, ways to help prevent infections from COVID-19, any questions they might have, and really to share a positive story and share resources that are available to the community.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Yeah, and really, I think this is a really important part of the community. The Latino community is I would argue, the backbone of nearly every business in the community. And so it's really important to understand what is going on in the community. So I urge people to listen. And, you know, when I do play music, it's a good way to also kind of get a sense of what the diverse culture that Park City has.
Okay. Hey, Jorge, thanks for the good work you've been doing. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Leslie. Have a great day.
It's Jorge Rodriguez again. He is the host on KPCW's Cada Domingo. You can hear that every Sunday evening, 7 to 10 p.m. right here on KPCW. News time now, 8:55.